It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell, joined as always by these two lugs. It's David J. Lohr and Philip Michaels. Hey, turkeys!
I'll be right with you. I have to look into this. I'm really worried that someone might be able to get into my computers to do things.
Oh, no.
Just promise me that this episode will feature none of this ethical madness. Spare me your ethical madness.
So we are discussing season 2, episode 13, Computer Date. It's not really what you think, but computers are involved, as well as not the only incidents where a mysterious laser company is involved in a Magnum PI plot. It was the 80s. Lasers were cool, people.
I was about to say, I thought, oh, it's the laser company again. There are two laser companies in Hawaii?
The laser company with the very catchy name, Global Laser Corporation. Mm-hmm. Great name. Great name. You could call it GLC, but then the L would stand for yet another acronym, which is very confusing. You shouldn't do that, people. Anyway, before we get to all of this, I've got a new segment that I'd like to introduce right here up at the top. And it is called, Hey, I Went to Hawaii.
Oh, it's the slideshow. Yes.
It's more of a brag than a segment.
I just went, well, for the first time since we began doing this podcast, one of us went to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And it was me. And so I was there, but I was on Maui, which, as we have learned watching Magnum PI, is the island of legend where everybody is going to it, coming from it, or wishes they were there, but we never see it because they're never going to leave Oahu. But I was on Maui. I did, however, bring some Magnum-related accompaniment. I have an Island Hoppers t-shirt that I wore. I have my my Owls Muffler King hat that I believe was given to me by one of you gents as a gift. And I also have my Detroit Tigers hat that I wore. I did chuckle one day. I was out wearing the Muffler King hat and saw someone walking the other way with the Detroit Tigers hat. And I wait a minute, and I just let it go. Because, you know, there are also Detroit Tigers fans in Hawaii. They can't all be Magnum PI players.
No, Lieutenant Tanaka. You passed Lieutenant Tanaka.
I was also very concerned that this guy was a fan of the modern Magnum PI. Not going to do that. We didn't look at each other and do the Spider-Man point thing, is what I'm saying. So anyway, I was up in Haleakala. On the top of the mountain in the crater, flying the flag of the Magnum podcast, and that's all. That's really the whole segment. Unless there are any questions, are there any questions you have about Hawaii?
I loved the one photo where you're wearing the Island Hopper shirt and the Owls Muffler King. Was there any point where anyone just kind of was looking, going, ugh.
No. What's beautiful about it is that nobody gets it. So it's like I was walking around thinking this Al's Muffler King Tigers hat, which you can get on Amazon and elsewhere, and and we know that it's a reused prop from when Tom Selleck was in that Chinese Typewriter TV movie where he was actually coaching a little league team, but inexplicably reused in Magnum PI for quite a while. It's a fun hat. I really enjoyed wearing it. I was saving it up for this trip. And one of the things that I love about it is that it is the deepest of deep cut references and nobody's going to get it. But I enjoyed it every minute I wore it because I knew that it was a deep cut Magnum PI reference.
And if someone walks up to you and says, hey, the Chinese typewriter, you've got a super fan.
I was just going to say that would be my dream.
So my, but had a nice time. I also did. I want to point out to the listeners that, in keeping with our very first episode, upon reaching Hawaii, I had to go to the bathroom. And when I left the airport bathroom, I sent you guys a selfie for proof of life because I wasn't murdered, nor did I eat the snow in a Hawaii airport bathroom, because that's where most murders, my understanding is, most murders happen in Hawaii airport bathrooms.
I understand a giant. Giant henchman did throw you into a wall, though. Mm. So
I got out of it. I got out of that, and then I had to pick up the ugliest dog on Maui, and it's a whole story.
Your car was towed.
Unfortunately, Michael Vigazzo is not available in this episode for his opinions about Maui. He's on a different island. Okay, Computer Date is an episode in which Magnum investigates computer crime. But there's a twist.
1982.
CEO of Laser Corporation, Charles Aidman, who I know as the voice, the original voice of the new Twilight Zone narration, although that's they redubbed it all later with a Canadian.
Robin Ward.
Yeah. Don't approve of that at all. Charles Aidman did a great job.
But Charles Aidman had been in the original Twilight Zone, too.
Yes. So he is the CEO, and he says, oh, Magnum, okay. I guess I got to recap the plot a little bit. Higgins is confused because Magnum is wearing a suit with an 80s tie, but blue jeans.
He looks like a basketball coach, a college basketball
coach. Yeah, well, there's a line later where Charles Aidman says to him, oh, I don't think I've seen coat and tie with blue jeans before. And I'm like, dude, just wait 8 years and you will see it everywhere.
And he's like, that's a great look. I wish I had the confidence to pull that off.
Steal this look, Magnum P.I. suit version, which is still blue jeans.
This did air in January of 1982, so I believe that's a month before Letterman came on the air on late night, so, you know.
So the Letterman wore slacks with the coat and tie, right?
Occasionally. Occasionally, I guess I'm thinking of him wearing his tennis shoes with a coat.
Ah, yes, with the tennis shoes.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
So
but I had nice flashbacks to the square-edged knit necktie.
Oh man,
I had like two or three.
That's
of
my
those.
Senior portrait. I have one of those in my senior portrait. Anyway, so Higgins gets over Magnum wearing part of a suit, and says that his old flame lady Ashley is coming to Hawaii. Magnum reassures him, don't worry, Higgins, you're probably not the only one who got fat, who's changed. And Magnum sells Higgins on an exercise program that in a week he'll look completely different. He not only is that not true, but it doesn't happen in this episode, despite the B-plot being Higgins exercises. Yes, friends, the B-plot of this episode is that Higgins exercises, and it is the second and final instance of suggesting that Higgins is a smoker. This doesn't come back again. It's really just a bit of business to have him constantly be pulling out cigarettes and having Magnum take them away from him because he's supposed to be getting in shape with running. As Magnum explains, here's what you do to get in shape in a week: running, swimming, weights, wraps, and marine exercises. Okay. All right.
Yes.
Wraps.
I hope that one day a Magnum super fan, after stopping you and complimenting you on your hat, sits down and does a super cut of Jonathan Higgins running, and they can use not only this episode, but the Macaw episode, Birdman of Budapest, where we learn that, I think, in the same tracksuit that Jonathan Higgins, not much of a runner.
You know what they should do is they should take the original Magnum theme song and cut together a new opening credits theme for Jonathan Higgins, The Adventures of Jonathan Higgins, that shows him as a man of action using all of those elements. By the way, friends who are familiar with the various Magnum P.I. opening credit sequences, this is the episode from which Higgins doing a sit-up while Magnum looks on while drinking a beer comes from. That happens right here.
And in fact, my daughter says now says, "Oh, we saw that episode."
Yeah.
Yes, we've seen many of the episodes.
That's right.
We've seen the one with Larry Minetti as the rodeo clown. We've seen that too. You don't celebrate that moment each week.
I totally get it, because when I was a kid, I loved seeing episodes where clips from the opening credits.
Yeah. That's in the credits.
Mission Impossible must have blown your mind.
Oh, that was amazing. Yeah.
So
every time.
I feel like we can just dispatch the Higgins B-plot right here, which is that he has an old flame coming to town. So Magnum is trading. It's the horse trading thing. He's going to be a trainer throughout this episode. Higgins jogs and is sweaty and runs and looks miserable, and that continues to happen. And the punchline at the end is that she shows up, and at the very end, they look at a picture of her from back in the day, and TC calls her a dog, which is
terrible,
really unacceptable and unkind on all levels. And then she shows up, and she's actually quite a handsome woman, and Higgins and the lady are kind of old friends, and perhaps there's something more. No, there isn't, because she's got a strapping young boy toy who is her traveling companion. Womp, womp, womp.
We've
and that's the whole B plot.
World.
That's the B plot right there. That's
it. And then the payoff is
joke.
he gets to take a drag off a cigarette and blow very meaningfully. And you never see him smoke again.
Nope.
The only,
he was scared straight was... by that pool boy, the traveling companion. Scared straight.
The only thing interesting to me about the B plot is that it's this weird balance in this episode where Higgins and Magnum are way friendly and Rick and TC and Thomas have a big falling out.
Yeah.
And so it is an interesting balance
and
there.
And it collides in that moment at the club, right? Which is it literally is the A and the B plot. And the writer's like, I don't know how I'm going to handle this. Where Rick is like, you're not welcome here, Magnum. Get off the grounds.
You're not even a member.
And Higgins says, well, then he's my guest. And it's like, what? Tables are turned.
It's a nice inverse.
Yeah. So that's the B plot. It's dumb. It's fine. Whatever. It's just, it's dumb in a way, but actually it's delightful in another way, which is if you're here for the Higgins Magnum relationship and their goofiness together, there's a lot of it in this episode
and it is
fun. It's sort of not important to the plot, but it doesn't matter. It's just a running bit and it's good stuff, I think.
And the car chase later is delightful.
And he gets involved. He jogs into one of the car chases in this episode, which is a funny little crossover moment. Okay, so computer crime. computer crime at the laser company. Magnum goes to the meeting of the board wearing his jeans, but he knows he's trying, and they're kind of like, you know, it's the PI, but they're giving him a hard time. The board is really suspicious. They're like, he says, oh, it's coming from marketing. They're like, no, it can't be marketing. But he's like, no, I've done, like, Magnum's very professional, actually. He's sort of like, no, I've done the research on the terminal that is being logged in on is at marketing. So it's somebody who has access to the codes. Codes is the word that they use a lot in this episode, and was in the marketing computer, and that's who it is. And they're like, bah, yes, but Mr. Magnum, you haven't actually caught the person. It's like awfully antagonistic when Magnum's like, I'm closing in. But then the CEO takes him aside and said, I think my wife is cheating on me. I would like you to investigate it. And he's like, all right, okay, I'll do it.
There was an attempt to be a little character building here, because the CEO is very much, oh, Magnum,
he's chummy.
The son I never had.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And he's calling him sir, and it's very much there's a sort of mentor-mentee relationship here.
I get the Magnum doesn't do sort of like class issues a lot, but here I definitely get the sense, especially in that board meeting, but even as in his relationship to Charles Aidman, the CEO, that it is like, you know, they look down on Magnum. He's a private eye. He's the beach bum. Even though he's also a decorated veteran and, you know, was in military intelligence, he is still this schlubby PI or whatever. And it's an interesting dynamic. And, you know, the CEO, even before we find out things about the CEO, that he's not so nice a guy, it's kind of a weird power imbalance there too, right? Where usually Magnum's the streetwise savvy guy, and this guy's like putting his arm around him and saying like, you know, that's okay, buddy. You know, cheer up, buddy. They have a long conversation at the, according to magnum-mania.com, the official Bible of Magnum podcast, the famous Hyatt Regency Waikiki Beach Resort and Spa. This episode of Magnum podcast brought to you apparently by Hyatt Regency Waikiki Beach Resort.
Oh boy.
And Spa.
Big fancy skyscraper hotel.
Hotel. Yep.
It's going to be upset that it lost that, that prime sponsorship deal with us.
Well, yeah, there's always next episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Big Fancy High Rise Hotel. Was that it? Anyway,
yeah, I don't. Clearly, that's why they must have canceled their business.
There's a weak branding there.
We never get it right.
Versus the Hyatt Regency Waikiki Beach Resort and Spa. Anyway, he investigates the wife. He follows her. The Ferrari has its top on because it's rainy. Basically, it's a rare top on Ferrari. And
something that happens only a few times
in
the show.
According to
Magnum-Mania.com.
So she ends up at a hotel that's full of moneyed tourists. Unlikely she'd run into anyone there. You know what that means as much as I do, says Magnum, which is a nice little moment. And of course, it's a very small island because the man she's going there to meet is our own friend Rick.
Oh, no. Now, this is one moment where they reemphasize the class issue, too, because Magnum talks to Higgins about it and asks, you know, kind of asks his advice, but puts it in terms of, oh, this other PI
Charlie
got into this thing.
The schlub.
Charlie Doyle.
And Higgins is like, isn't he that terrible, low class? Oh, no wonder he fell into this. And it's just a nice moment to say, all right, they're still strata of even of the PIs.
I would also like to point out later on, a rival PI shows up to take over Magnum's case. And I was very angry that it was not Charlie Doyle.
Well, I thought that was coming.
You hung that up there and then you left me hanging, like naming an episode computer date and not taking me on Magnum's computer date.
So what I will say about the guy that gets brought in is that while it's not the lantern hung on Doyle, it is an investigation consultant wearing a suit and tie. And I really liked that because it's very much
to be higher up.
Okay, Magnum, with your shorts and whatever and your baseball cap, he's not a private investigator. He's an investigation consultant in a suit. And he says the person is not in marketing. And I really love the clash there because this guy is obviously someone that the board is going to be more comfortable with, but we're immediately sort of like suspicious and he doesn't really buy Magnum's investigation, which is frustrating because, you know, Magnum seems to be on the ball. I think that was a really interesting choice to have it be the corporate consultant that's brought in for the computer crime.
Get ahead of ourselves. He's the one who says, hey, someone's trying to kill Magnum over this. Let's follow and see. And maybe the person will expose themselves. And if Magnum dies in the process, well, then he just doesn't cash his checks.
Yeah, so, that's the kind of ethics that you need in an investigation consultant, you see.
Which is why I wanted Charlie Doyle, damn it.
Yeah, yeah.
that's a total Charlie Doyle movie.
So Rick has been in a series of hot dates in a series of expensive tourist hotels with the CEO's wife, who is actually Larry Minetti's real wife, I believe, according to Magnum-Mania.com. So that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
More wives cast, and she's fine. She's perfectly fine, I think. As the
they have chemistry.
As the as the CEO's wife, she breaks it off with him. Though things are getting a little heated up, and this is where we get to our ethic issue, which is Magnum goes back to the
madness.
Yes, Magnum goes back to the CEO and says, "I can't continue with this case because I would be compromised." And so I need to not do this. And then he tries to divert Rick and not have him go out with the lady. But he's like, no, what are you, my mom? And I think what's really interesting about this is I'm not sure I back up Magnum's ethical decision here. Because first off, I would argue maybe that Magnum's true ethics in this situation is he needs to disclose what he did to his client because he took the job. And that he actually does need to report. And that it's unethical to withhold information to your client because it might involve a friend. I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll need to take Private Investigation 101. That's another episode.
If only there were a class.
Yeah, exactly right. But anyway, I'm not entirely sure I agree with Magnum's decision making here, although it does make for a better plot, I guess.
I think you're right that he has to do full disclosure as to why he's dropping the case. I think Larry Minetti gets up on his high horse a little bit too much in this episode, as I'm sure we'll discuss.
Yeah. I mean, because Rick ultimately finds out that Magnum knows about this and blames Magnum for the suspicion of the husband, where Magnum has tried to do, again, I would argue, do more right by Rick than Rick deserves. Right? Like, I don't think Rick Wright deserves it, right? Right? Do right by lots of rights in this sentence.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think he deserves it, and yet he takes it out on Magnum. And, like, he's the guy who's having an affair with the CEO's wife in public hotels where the public goes.
I have written down here, this is a Rick-centric episode, where Rick ricks it up to the fullest extent. And, you know, he's the one who gets petulant. He's the one who's cheating.
Yeah, he fake punches Magnum. I mean, it's a real punch in the episode, but it's very obviously fake.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like the only defense I can come up with for Thomas is that he's trying to protect his source to ice pick, right? That's the only good thing
in his
benefit. You know, because otherwise, it's like, no, actually, your buddy's kind of being sleazy here. This is, you know, stop that.
We're getting really high and mighty there, adulterer.
Yeah, I come back to the fact that Magnum's been hired by a client to prove that his wife is cheating on him. He proves it, but because it's his friend, he doesn't reveal it to the client. I don't think that's ethical. I think that might be some unethical madness going on there. But again, write in if you're an ethics expert.
Well, it certainly doesn't.
Magnum at theincomparable.com.
subject for ethics.
Yep.
Our new segment, Ethicist Corner.
Yep.
I mean, I did like that the plot is sort of more like what a real private investigator would be looking into. And I liked the idea of an ethical conundrum.
Sure.
Is this an actual ethical conundrum?
No.
No.
Not really.
No.
I think the old saying, fellas, is that two wrongs don't make a right, but two wrongs do make a Rick.
Yeah. Oh.
We've been Rick writing.
Now, we're going to have a real ethical conundrum in a minute, as we've already discussed, because what happens is...
Oh, TC is storming off. He can't bear this ethical match.
Yes.
So also, I guess he sticks with Rick and the friend divorce.
I guess. But Magnum gets Higgins in the wine cellar, so, you know.
Yeah, I think Magnum came out okay.
So, by the way, this is unimportant other than the scene where they have their confrontation at the club was shot on an extremely windy day. It's like the tables are about to blow over in that entire scene. It's pretty funny. Magnum is almost hit.
It's the subtext.
Magnum is almost hit by a crazy car twice. It does a U-turn and then slowly motors past him a second time.
That's a hell of a U-turn.
Therefore, it's time for a car chase. They do a car chase, but Magnum gets pulled over because the guy runs a red light. And so Magnum runs the red light, and the cop sees him and pulls him over, at which point Magnum looks at the camera. Like, can you believe this?
And I will say, and this goes for the whole episode, but even in this chase, the car choreography is pretty good. Yeah. They earned their keep in this episode.
My thought when I was watching this episode is... And some other episodes we've seen here is like, this comes from the era where TV car chases were a staple and they really know how to do them. Like, it's like, that's like, they know how it costs some money, but they know that they're going to get, like, this is kind of what the people want. Everybody's been primed. A TV detective show is going to have some car chases, and they do. Yeah, absolutely incredible job.
And I got to say, I mean, I watched Knight Rider. I watched The A-Team and Hardcastle and McCormick and The Dukes of Hazzard and all these things. And, you know, most of them were very cartoonish. This actually looks a little bit
This
real.
Is 70s detective car chase,
this
right?
Is it's proper a car chase.
More realism in our car chase here.
It's a very Rockford.
Yeah.
Both chases are very Rockford chases.
So the Global Laser Corporation, we get a moment where the security guard explains how security works. You put a card in. Card checks.
Did either of you notice his name badge? The security guard?
No.
Apparently his name is Walrus.
Okay.
Wow.
There's nothing else there. It's not even a segment. I just sat there the whole time going, Walrus?
Well, whenever he's interviewed, when they ask him his name, the HR department, he says, "I am the Walrus."
Yeah. His last name is Good Job. Anyway, so what happens is this is where we discovered that the CEO has brought in an investigation consultant since Magnum recused himself, who says it's not in marketing. Magnum says, "Hey, somebody tried to kill me. Could it be from another case? I'm not on any other cases." Ouch, Magnum. No other cases, really. The consultant is a little bit shifty, and the CEO is going to like say, "Oh yes, of course, Magnum. We'll let everybody know that you're not on the case anymore. So whoever is here who's guilty will stop trying to kill you." However, the consultant says, "Wait a second. What if we let them try to kill Magnum, and then we watch?"
Yeah.
And then we'll know
We've
who did it.
We've replaced your private investigator with this brand new freeze-dried private
well,
investigator.
Well, he's a corporate
Let's watch.
Monster. I think that's the message here. He's the corporate monster. We can use this.
I think it would be funnier if it was, "We'll follow Magnum, watch this guy try and kill, and watch this guy try and kill him, and then catch the guy who did it?" Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. If we have time.
Yeah.
I just want to watch Magnum die. Yeah. Charlie Doyle.
Exactly.
Investigator to the stars.
So Now, so we do have the Rick and Magnum and TC and Higgins confrontation at the club where Rick tells him to leave and Higgins tells him to stay because Higgins is going to go jogging. He apparently was on a surf ski earlier. Man, if there was footage of that, boy, I would have loved to see that.
He's my trainer.
This is where TC says, I don't want to hear this ethical madness. That goes that yes. happens right in here. But anyway, so Higgins goes for a jog and Magnum picks him up and then somebody starts shooting at him and we get another car chase, which leads to the line, I say, Magnum, that was rather exhilarating, which I thought it was great. Mac is called into action here. He says, I knew he'd say yes. No, says Mac, but I'll pay you $20 an hour to come with me because you know about computers. They break into the Laser Corporation. Who better than the security consultant to break the security?
There's a nice bit of business there because Mac is all, wait, I thought you worked here. Yes, yes. I'm just trying to see if they've implemented my recommendations.
Yes, I'm searching for security holes. That's what we're doing here. In a moment that I thought was actually pretty good in terms of the computer crime thing, Mac says, I can't get to those files because someone else is already logged in with that username. And can you tell where it is? And that would have been a thing you could do with a, like on an old Unix or VMS system. You could have found it out. He says it's in R&D. And they go in there and it turns out Skeptical Mustache Man, as I've dubbed him from the board, is in there embezzling money. Or is he stealing secrets? Well, it turns out.
Stealing secrets.
It turns out he's stealing secrets because when he's caught, it's revealed that they also checked in accounting. Mac checked, and $2 million has been transferred to a numbered account in Switzerland. At which point he said, well, wait a second. I may be an industrial espionager, but I'm no embezzler. Oh, no. Could there be two separate crimes happening at Laser Corporation?
Is he like in a Teamsters Union of Crime where it's one man, one job?
Yeah, that's right.
It's just, I can't, sorry. I don't want to take away anything from my brother thief.
I think maybe the argument here is that he had access to the R&D data, but he didn't have access to the accounting data.
That is probably true as well. Right. I would also note that unlike Magnum, who thought it was in marketing, it was in R&D, like the sleazy jerk detective thought.
That's right. They were just using, although maybe some of it, who knows? Who knows? I don't know. Computers, how do they work?
Someone should start a magazine or something.
So Randolph, the CEO, Magnum realizes, has the codes, and he's headed for Japan on his plane, and Magnum's like, oh, he's skipping town with the $2 million. That'll last a whole lifetime. Rick, meanwhile, being a creepy stalker, has decided to show up at the CEO's house because he wants to get his girl back. She dumps him and finally admits that she even lied about being in love with him. She was just having fun. Rick is very sad. He talks her into driving her to the airport. Again, what?
Does he talk her in or does she talk him into it? I forget.
I think he's like, if I can spend enough time at the airport, I
prove
my love.
You over. Yeah. Okay. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just blown away by the audacity of that thing. Yeah. More time with Larry Minetti. That's what will convince you to love him.
Yeah, yeah. Bringing
it's always the schlub doing the favors.
Bringing the boyfriend to the airport to meet the husband is not a usual move, but that's what happens
but
here.
But it's a Rick move,
and it's very much this is my friend Rick. Oh well, thank you for bringing my wife, and now we're going to jet off to Japan. And then Magnum shows up, and we get he takes Rick hostage briefly, and there's a get back in the car, Magnum, and Magnum's like, you know, you're not going to shoot because then I'll shoot. You'll kill Rick and then I'll kill you. Ha ha. And at which point he basically runs randomly toward like the runway and Magnum shoots at him, which I thought was a little extreme. Where's he going to go? Do you really want to kill this guy? Is the jet right there? Is the pilot on board? You could just close the jet door and say, take off. But like maybe not.
Charles Aidman has the weirdest running style I think I've ever seen.
Weirder than Jonathan Higgins?
It's I think the same person trained them. It's really disturbing. And then, you know, diving under the plane and Magnum rolls under the plane for no reason.
It's fun.
That was kind of weird.
It's exciting. Cute. They're on the back of the plane because the front of the plane has propellers and it would be dangerous. Yes. So it's the back of the plane.
That would be bad.
That's the Raiders of the Lost Ark warning film. Don't go near those propellers.
No. Instead, go roll under the table. That's what you should do.
Yeah. Much safer.
So anyway, take them away, boys. There's this thing where Rick finally is living down being taken for a ride by this lady. He says, you know, I have a problem with believing people. They say, believe me. And I say, okay. By the way, Thomas, how did you know he was bluffing when he was offering to kill himself? And he says, look, I just knew, believe me. At which point Rick says, okay, thereby proving Rick yeah. is Rick. And the episode wraps again with TC seeing the picture of Higgins' girlfriend and saying, woof, woof. But Paolo, her traveling companion, is there. Whoop, whoop, whoop. And that
I literally have in huge letters, not cool, TC.
No.
No.
Even in 82.
And that is normally computer date.
No, yeah, normally I'm a full TC fan on this show.
Oh, yes, we know.
I do not approve of TC in this episode.
No, bad TC. He sides with Rick, even though Magnum is trying to do Rick a solid, and he's mocking the appearance of Higgins' old girlfriend.
Of someone he's never met.
Mocking ethics.
Yes, yeah. And ethics. And he's
and
nothing
ethics.
With ethical madness. That's just ethics
and madness.
You
know who I enjoyed in this episode?
Who?
And I don't often enjoy them. Mac. Mac is really... Maybe I've been soured by all the fake Mac, episodes we've been watching on the show. But here, you see like, oh, he could have been a really effective guy.
And this is a really...
Now I see what Donald Belisario saw in him to spirit him away.
I would say this is maybe archetypal Mac, too, because it's Mac is grousing about being involved, doesn't want to be involved, gets sweet-talked into it. And then proves himself extremely useful.
Yep.
And it's not just finding information. It's not just, you know, well, here you go, Tom. It's we actually get to see the process. We get to see him as an intelligent person doing
he's
his
tapping
job.
Into those fancy computers
right?
the kids are
the
talking about.
Bit. He has the funny bit where Magnum runs off and
leaves him with Mustache Man.
Leaves him with Mustache Man and he says, so, do you play cards? Or
which is hilarious.
It's great.
Yeah.
And you know, and I look at this and think, for some reason, Belisario thought, yeah, let's blow him up and then I'll take him and turn him into an idiot man-child in the 30s.
So
why?
So
anyway,
all told, I think this is an okay episode of Magnum PI. I think it's got some good PI business. It's got a humorous Magnum Higgins subplot. It's got some good car chases. It has good use of Mac. It, you know, Rick is an ass in it, and TC doesn't come across very well. But you know, other than that, you know, it's not. I wouldn't put it on a top shelf of Magnum episodes or anything. But I think it's a fun breezy hour that's got some good stuff in it.
Yeah, I'd give it 2.5-3 stars. I mean, Rick did not seem out of character to me. I didn't mind Rick being a jerk.
Well, I guess it's that
TC was.
That's the question, really: is do you accept that Rick is a jerk because he kind of is?
I totally bought everything he did in this.
Guys, I don't like it when good friends fight.
I see that.
You stupid idiots.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, take your ethical madness somewhere to someone who cares. All right, I would like to introduce a new segment now.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
It's in lieu
the one where I'm on the surf ski?
In lieu of In the Mouth of Magnum, our Lego segment, because David hasn't had a chance to make Legos yet for this episode and describe them to us.
He didn't finish his chores, so he didn't get to play with his toys.
Instead,
they will be there, aloha.
We have a new segment called Lego versus Letters.
Oh,
and it's a letter from listener Martha.
A letter?
Yeah,
oh,
it is.
Oh,
but it's
I
also
knew it's
a but it's also a Lego segment. You see, it's both.
Yes.
Oh,
Martha writes,
yes.
"My husband is a classic Magnum fan, and though he's not much of a podcast guy, will chuckle when I share anecdotes of the podcast." That is our primary audience, I think, is people who are not interested in the podcast having parts of the podcast recounted for them by their loved ones. So
exactly.
Thank you, Martha.
That is the dream.
I was inspired by David's Lego activities, so I purchased the Ersatz Magnum minifigure and ordered a Ferrari set from Lego online. Upon seeing his Father's Day gift, he was charmed by the set, but pointed out I bought the wrong model of Ferrari. So it was the ungrateful loved ones,
seems
apparently.
Seems kind of jerky.
Are you married to Rick?
Yeah.
All I will say is, take it up with Lego.
So we'll have to rectify that in time for his birthday in September. Would love to have you guys do a compare and contrast with the new Magnum. I lasted for half the pilot and gave up, even though I like the fact that Higgins is a woman. I don't know. Somebody's going to have to dare us better than that to watch more of the new Magnum.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone who says, "Oh, you should watch the new Magnum. It's terrible."
Yes, I, of course, could not, but perhaps you could.
you're not selling it, man.
It is. It is the TV equivalent of, "Oh, this tastes awful. Taste it."
Mm-hmm. I received my Magnum PI minifigure in the mail from the Etsy shop that David told us about. So I've got a
Firestar toys.
He's here. I got a Magnum here. They actually lost my order, and I wrote to them and I said I never got it, and they said, "Oh, we're sorry," and they sent me another one. So they're great.
Oh no.
So anyway, thank you, Martha. Tell your husband all about this letter that we read.
Yeah.
I guess.
And maybe leave out the part where we called him a jerk. Great.
Just say that he reminds us of Rick. He'll get it. He'll get the message.
Yeah.
You'll appreciate it. He won't even know. It's fine.
Yeah.
And I will say in praise of Firestar Toys, they also have a Ted Lasso figure, and I am looking forward to making Ted Lasso Lego scenes for our Ted Lasso podcast.
Mm. Contact
no,
the
no, I'm not. I'm not actually
the Ted Lasso people.
Gotta have
for that.
A dream.
All right. We have one more letter.
Another letter.
Yep, we do.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I do have to confess to the audience, now I actually get the letters to my mailbox, so I really am enthusiastic when we get mail, but I'm enthusiastic in the privacy of my own home.
I see. And here, after it's just a put on for the cameras.
It's just fake. Yeah.
All right. Well,
I do actually squeal every time.
I can't believe it. Every time a letter comes in, it's amazing. Yeah. Magnum at theincomparable.com. This is from listener Eric. Eric says, "I am your age,
so
Magnum holds a similar place in my heart. While listening to the Curse of the King Kamehameha Club, your description of the author of the Kahunas book, remember those Kahunas, they're bad, got me quite excited. If I may be so bold, a new segment." Wait, there's a segment inside a letter? What?
Can letter writers introduce
only,
segments?
Only on Magnum
Let's see.
Podcast.
Tales of brushes with people associated with Magnum PI. I guess they can.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
there
wow.
it is.
In 1984, I visited Hawaii with my family. We spent a week on the Big Island at the Kilauea Military Camp, which is next to the Kilauea Volcano. We visited Volcanoes National Park, and there was an author/ranger giving a presentation. The speaker was very knowledgeable, a nice older gentleman, and we bought a few of his books. Yes, I met L.R. McBride, author of the Kahuna's book. He autographed my book for me and everything. Sadly, I do not have the Kahuna's book. I think maybe my brother has it. So there you have it. This was Tales of Brushes with People Associated with Magnum PI. Your show is a delight. Bye, guys. Listener Eric.
See, this is a perfect Glenn moment. He signed the book. We have the book. I think my brother has it. I don't have the book.
He has the other book. He has another so L.R. McBride book, but not the Kahuna's book that's in Magnum PI and the Curse of the King Kamehameha.
So prime Glenning.
It's good enough. And that
we'll take it.
If there's no other business, I believe that might bring us to the end of this episode of Magnum Podcast. Anything we haven't covered that we need to cover? Any old business? Any new business?
I'm still trying to figure out the title because, I mean, there are computers and there are dates.
Yes.
But there is no actual computer date. I mean, why? What is... What am I missing about the title?
In 1982, the concept of computer dates, as we think of them, had not yet been invented yet. And it was literally a computer date was when you sat down in front of a computer.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I mean, they do that.
Don't fact check me on that one.
You know.
Maybe Mac is Magnum's computer date.
Yes. Hey, let's go work on a computer date.
That's why he's so broken.
Actually, the truth
three.
Is, there's a plot A is about a computer, and plot B is about Higgins having a date with his old flame. Therefore, computer date. At least they didn't call it date computer.
It's literally the log line from the board in the writer's room.
Yeah.
And Rick is going on many dates with a lady whose husband is using computers to commit crime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Works on so many levels.
And that brings us to the end of this episode of Magnum Podcast. We'll be back next time with another episode of Magnum PI selected semi at random by us. But until then, you can email us, of course, magnum@theincomparable.com. I've been Jason Snell. They've been David J. Lohr and Philip Michaels. Bye, guys.
I'm going to the tourist hotel, and you know as well as I know what that means.
You're okay by me, computer.
Enough of this ethical madness.
Uh-huh.